Hello, makers. Welcome to the Making Conversation podcast, where we chat all about making the app and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing here at Making. My pronouns are she, her, and my Making app username is KnitPearl. I love TikTok. I have met so many cool people through that community, and I'm so lucky to find people there that are so inspiring and wonderful. Many friends, including some that have been on this very podcast, started either as Making's TikTok friends or from my own personal channel. And we will definitely hop into more of what we're talking about today, but our guest completely jumped off the screen one day when I was scrolling TikTok and was an instant follow. Charlotte's bio says it all. Slowly building my ideal wardrobe through making, collecting, and mending. And not only that, but her videos are just delightful. And as we talked about her being on the podcast, Charlotte suggested that we bring her friend and quote-unquote incredible stylist with a strong focus on sustainable dressing, and a talented artist who creates one-off hand-painted pieces. And I was like, yes, perfect. So Charlotte and Pooja, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
My name is Pooja and my pronouns are she, her. My Making username is Little Pooj, which is the same as my TikTok and all other platforms. Charlotte and I are both in Toronto. How long have I been a maker? I think most of my life, really, even as I think most children are makers in their own way, and it's driven or continued into my adulthood. My to-go medium is paint. I'm mostly a painter. And recently, I've been painting on clothing and leather goods that I salvaged from thrift store, mostly stuff that's been stained and needs a new life, or like stains that can't be removed. I like to paint over them and save the pieces. What else do I like to make? I think I sculpt occasionally. I like to make TikToks. And what do I do when I'm not making? I recently graduated from the same program that Charlotte was in. And yeah, I'm still figuring it out.
So my name is Charlotte, also she, her. My maker username is Charlotte Rose DD, but soon to be changed to my TikTok username, which is second.life.studio. Pooja mentioned I live in Toronto, but I grew up in Montreal. And I've been a maker, yeah, my whole life as well. I think I was lucky enough to have a family that encouraged creativity. My dad's a graphic designer and my mom's a filmmaker. They always, I guess, enabled me to explore my creative interests. And in terms of mediums, I definitely geared towards textiles. And I think that's mostly because of my grandmother. She's from Nova Scotia, and there's a huge textile community there with a lot of rug hooking and quilting and things. And when I was much, much younger, every time I'd go over to her house, we would make one item of clothing for my Barbie. And then slowly that became one item of clothing for my dolls. And then by the time I understood the basics, we started making clothing for me. So she really gave me the foundation to make things for myself. And then in university, I ended up declaring a minor in textiles, not necessarily because I saw it as a career path, but just because I was so incredibly jealous of everyone getting to learn how to use looms and natural dyes and things like that. So I really wanted to, I guess, pursue my enthusiasm in that way. I recently have gotten very into cooking, and I think that's been, especially because I tend to post a lot of what I'm making on TikTok, I think sometimes I feel like I need to be documenting everything I'm making, and that adds a level of stress that I didn't used to have when it came to cooking. But cooking doesn't have that for me at all. And I really enjoy, in the same way that I like following a pattern in sewing, just like following a recipe can be really calming for me. So I've been exploring being a better cook. Also just because I love food so much.
I mean, I would argue that cooking is making. We do have a lot of people who cook and post it on the app. And yeah, that doesn't mean that you have to come up with a different answer, but.
Fair enough. I'm very into biking. I think that always comes in the summer and then disappears in the winter when I don't do any exercise, but in the summer months.
As I am always thinking of what would be interesting to talk about here on our little podcast, side note, if any of you have any requests, please email them in at hq@makingco.com. I often look to Making's values that are always linked in the show notes and pull from there. I mean, we are all about the act of making and slow fashion, and all of this links well with mending, upcycling, and thrifting. So let's talk a little bit about why these things are important. And though the fast fashion versus slow fashion sustainability conversation has been brought more to the forefront in the last few years, we believe it is super important to continue to talk about it. So from craftsmanship.net, global clothing production doubled between 2000 and 2015, far exceeding actual demand. Meanwhile, Americans wear just over 20% of the clothes we already have in our closets and tend to don each item a mere 7 to 10 times before, quote unquote, tossing it. Which I read that and I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, I feel like my habits are definitely different than that. But, you know, especially when we're talking about TikTok, as you scroll through, how many times have you seen, let's look at my Shein haul, and like they dump out a million pieces of clothing. Remake is a global advocacy nonprofit organization and is a great resource to learn more about what we can do to educate ourselves, not only fighting for climate justice in the clothing industry, but also fighting for fair pay. So from their site, globally, 80% of discarded textiles are doomed for the landfill or incineration. Only 20% are actually reused or recycled. The clothing that ends up in landfills can sit there for 200 plus years. And much of what we donate does get packed, shipped, and resold overseas or does get dumped in landfills. All of this really does feel overwhelming. Like, how can we fix it all? But I think that the first thing that I always, you know, want to point to when we're talking about any sustainability is, as an individual, you can't fix it all. Don't feel that weight and pressure. But what we can do is work on certain things to show up in a more thoughtful way for Mother Earth. And it really is on the large companies to get their act together. But putting your money where your beliefs are, or in this case, not putting your money, I guess, can show some of these most damaging brands, again, looking at the Sheins of the world, that we're just not here for it. Doing your best to buy better quality, also making your clothes, obviously, we're a big fan of that, buying timeless pieces, etc. Of course, this is why we have you all here. Let's talk more about mending, upcycling, and thrifting, shall we?
First off, I just, out of my own curiosity, want to know Pooja's thrifting tips, because Pooja's a stylist, and to be honest, in the past, she's come to my house and literally helped me put together an outfit with the clothing I already have in a way that I've never seen before, and that was such a cool experience. Realizing that styling is a skill that can actually help you reuse what you already own.
I think right now with thrifting and how it's gotten more into the mainstream, I think it's very important to be decisive while thrifting. I think even in the realm of thrifting, people can often overconsume. When it comes to styling yourself, I think you always have to be picky and you have to be kind of decisive with what you like and what really feels like you. And that's most important in a thrift store where there's such an abundance and variety and everything seems relatively cheaper to the outside world.
When you were talking about mending and upcycling and making, the first thing that came to mind is, of course, the fact that if you are someone who does make things for yourself, you realize how much labor goes into clothing and or jewelry or anything. And I think that's definitely been the case for me, just like realizing it takes 15 hours to make a pair of pants, and then you really can't reconcile that with an $18 price tag, for instance. For me, I learned about mending when I became more a part of the slow fashion community, and that happened mostly because I've always loved clothes. I love expressing myself through clothes. I've shaved my head and had blue hair and had different phases and been very feminine and vintage and all the things. But then in university, I was becoming much more aware of sustainability issues, and I was holding a lot of guilt for the amount of clothing I owned, and I just, it stopped. And I felt like I even just had friend groups, my sustainability friend groups and my fashion friend groups, and there just wasn't that much crossover, and I felt like I needed to choose one passion or the other. Finding the slow fashion world was this wonderful way of finding an intersection in my interests and realizing that while many people perceive fashion as frivolous, it's actually this major as you were pointing out, major source of waste and pollution, and therefore addressing the fashion industry is actually very much worth my time. And also, as somebody who understands the appeal of having a lot of clothes, I think I have more insight into approaching people who are interested in the slow fashion movement as well. What really solidified my love of mending is this beautiful book that was written by two printmakers. So it's essentially this adult picture book about mending. The two sisters that wrote the book approach mending as a way to honor the land and the materials, the people that made the clothes, and also yourself through having this moment of calm and creative practice. The act of mending felt so much more meaningful after reading this book, and it also made it feel so much more worthwhile to invest 45 minutes into fixing a hole on my pants when realistically sometimes you're not actually saving money by mending because clothing has become so inexpensive. And that was my introduction to the creative side of mending. And then I read this book by Adja Barber called Consumed. And she basically, the crux of her mission is basically the idea that you are enough and therefore you have enough, and being able to realize that your need to consume is so much deeper than just wanting pretty things. And it comes from obviously a capitalist system that makes you feel like you're lacking. So it just suddenly felt like this little revolution to mend your clothes. It felt like almost a
damn the man.
Yeah, it felt like a little political act, like this small
tangible resistance.
Yeah, and then it's also become this way of finding people with similar values and wearing it almost as a badge, and also just having another excuse to talk about clothes, which is wonderful.
I just learned how to mend, specifically like socks that I've knit a few years ago. It was just like, I'm saving this thing that I made with my hands that I love so much so that I can continue to rewear it and rewear it. And I hope that some of the socks that I have knit will just be patchworks by the time I am an old lady. And it is a very beautiful, visually beautiful thing too, right? Like if we're talking about different types of mending, there's visible mending and, you know, obviously there's other ways of doing it without it being as visible. But I love that you said it's like a badge of honor.
I was also going to say it's also fascinating how almost every culture has a tradition of mending. And I have always found textiles to be a really interesting way to learn about different cultures and different values, because the objects that a culture creates are always reflective of their values and intentions. Doing a deep dive on the history of mending is incredibly interesting if you ever have time.
Yeah, maybe we can do another podcast and talk about the history of mending, because I almost went into that in the beginning of this. And then I was like, if we start with the history of mending, this podcast will be 5 years long.
Yeah, but it also just in the history of product design and how we've gotten to a place of planned obsolescence is really fascinating, because it's not that, it's quite a new practice to get rid of what you own.
I recently went to a workshop that was hosted by Charlotte and with Wendy. And I left from that workshop knowing how to mend my clothes, which was really amazing. It made me realize what a simple practice it is too. Like if you need to fix something, it actually doesn't take that long.
And there's so much, I think it's referred to as like de-skilling, where people just don't even know how to pick up a sewing needle anymore, which is not their fault, but it's... made it a lot harder to practice mending. France just put in a new bill where you can get tax credit for alterations. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Yeah, that's very cool.
That's amazing. Okay, I wanted to take a moment and actually talk about this a little bit more, because it's so interesting to me. From the BBC, I found an article called "French to Get Bonus to Make Do and Mend Clothes." There was also another article that I found on CNN, and I think the headline really says it all. France will pay you to repair your clothes. Anyways, back to the BBC article. So it was by Paul Kirby. France is launching a bonus scheme to persuade consumers to repair their clothes and worn-out shoes rather than throwing them away or buying new ones. And the government was committed to tackling fast fashion and sought to encourage consumers to buy more quote-unquote virtuous products and repair them rather than buying new items. I just think that this is so fascinating, and it would be really cool if other countries were to follow suit with certain things like this. I think that sometimes when it comes to thinking about getting alterations on clothes, it can be a little much on the pocketbook, but maybe we can start a revolution and, you know, get more countries to follow suit. What do you think? Let's dive into thrifting a little bit, because sometimes it can feel super overwhelming. Like, I'm that person where I walk into a thrift store and I'm just like, are they going to have my size? Is anything that I like going to be here? How long are these things going to last, et cetera? What should you look for to ensure that the garment is made to last, is going to be something that you have in your closet for a while, et cetera?
I think the material, I think that's where you should start. It's become harder, I think, to find more natural fibers in the thrift store. A natural fiber, and looking for that is the best thing you can do.
And my partner always jokes that I'll buy anything silk, because it's true. I just have so many silk things that don't necessarily fit, or I don't even like the color, but I'm just so excited that it's 100% silk that I end up buying it. Definitely fibers is a huge one. And I think as a maker, it's so exciting to realize that just because something is not exactly the shape you want it to be, or it has shoulder pads or something, you can remove those and turn it into something you'll actually enjoy wearing. I've cropped so many skirts. I feel scandalous cutting off 12 inches off all the skirts I buy. But now long skirts are popular anyway. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do this already on TikTok, but I find having a Pinterest board to reference is really helpful. Having your inspirations already thought out, and even having a short list of specific items you're looking for, has helped me, because I get so excited about statement pieces, and then nothing in my wardrobe goes together. I think also just going with a friend. Another big thing, and this I know Pooja can speak to, but you don't have to thrift in person. And thrifting in person, I personally love. I think it's really fun to go with friends and to spend 4 hours, but I have a lot of friends and my partner who absolutely can't stand being there for more than 15 minutes, just because it's very overstimulating. I have notifications on almost all of the thrifting platforms, like ThredUp and Poshmark, and what else?
eBay.
Oh, Pooja's big on eBay. I haven't quite figured out eBay yet. Yeah. A lot of these platforms let you save your searches. And there was, for instance, a Sandy Liang dress that I absolutely adored. It was, I mean, hundreds of dollars when it first came out, but it's been like 5 years and I still love it. So I haven't been waiting 5 years for it, but maybe 6 months ago I started putting notifications just for the Sandy Liang brand in my size. And sure enough, the dress came up and it was, I think, $40. And that's just, it's also just fun. It feels like a little lottery of like interests. And I mean, it's easy to find popular brands, but also if you're interested in smaller designers and struggle to pay their sticker price.
I went through like a phase of being like physically unwell, and that's when I started thrifting online, and it really opened up a lot for me, because you can honestly find anything. But there are a lot of little tricks on there to make it work. I recently learned that if you put like a minus sign and a word in the search bar on eBay, it'll delete like the things you don't want to see. Like, what? You can put minus polka dots and then you can put something and you won't get polka dots. And I was like blown away.
I did find just this quick little guide for if you're like thrifting in person to recognize if garments are made well. And you did touch on this, but it's checking whether like the thread looks strong, gently pulling the seams of the garment to make sure that it holds together well. Often like the thickness of the material can give a better quality. And then this, I feel like this is an obvious one, but metal zippers versus plastic. And then the YKK zipper is usually a sign of quality.
I read an article recently, and this was really pushing boundaries, but there's a really wonderful sustainable fashion magazine called Sustainable Baddie. And it's by the creator, That Curly Top. And there was an article about thrifting things that have poo stains, which I was like, wow, I've never... I don't think I've ever gone so far as to buy something with a poo stain, but she offered solutions, and I thought that was pretty radical.
Like poop. Okay. I
draw the line.
That might be a line that I would draw. However, there are solutions out there. And again, I think that this proves that there's an ass for every seat. Every single podcast, we all talk about what we're working on right now. Any whips or cooking or anything creative. What are you working on, Charlotte?
I'm putting this one into the universe because now I have to complete it. Okay, I looked up buying a rug, and it turns out rugs are like $1,000. Rugs
are so expensive.
Outrageously expensive.
It's wild.
Yeah, but I also realized how much they can improve my room, and my bedroom needs a lot of help. So I went to a rug store, and I was looking through all their little samples, and I realized that all their little samples are squares. And as somebody who is familiar with patchwork, I figured, why not just collect a bunch of samples for free and make a rug? And the store I was at, they were very confused why I wanted to buy their samples, but they sold them to me for $1.30 each. They're samples for rugs that are out of production. And I've decided to make my rug beige, white, cream combination because it feels like those are the most popular colors for rugs. So I have been every weekend going to different rug stores in the city to collect rug samples, and I'm hopefully going to be able to combine them all and make an interesting looking rug.
Please put it in the making app. That's so interesting, and I'm excited to see that journey.
Yeah, I do hope it works out though. I had a funny moment last year where I tried to upcycle a shoe out of this grocery bag, and I was so excited about it, and people were like very encouraging on TikTok, and then I got to like the big reveal video, and I was like, wow, this is so crazy. Like 20,000 people have seen it and only 300 likes. And my partner was like, Charlotte, it's because it's ugly. Like, your followers are too nice to tell you that it's ugly. So nobody is commenting on anything. Everyone's just not liking and pretending they didn't see the results. And I was mortified.
What are you working on right now, Pooja?
I'm trying to paint a miniskirt. I think it used to be part of school uniform. And I'm trying to make it more fun and different. It's a navy blue miniskirt, and my goal is to paint like a large orange lily on it that kind of spreads across. And right now I just have the base down.
I am working on a couple of different things, but the one that I'm really excited about right now, I'm very new in my embroidering journey, and I had only made one other piece before this, but we have a special illustration that we had commissioned, and it is going to be available for Bright Collective members. The goal at the end is to make it like a patch to put on like the back of a jean jacket. I'll post more about that because when this comes out, it will be live already for Bright Collective members. So I'll be able to show more. The other thing that I've been working on is more about making, but in Seattle here, we have something coming up called Flock Fiber Festival, and it is going to be super fun, and we have some really awesome things that we have in the works around it, especially within the fiber arts world, these festivals and gatherings and such that not everyone can go to. So we're working together to bring some of Flock Fiber Festival to everyone. So more coming on that soon. I'm super excited about it. Upcycling is a very general term and can mean a lot of things. Where did you both start with upcycling?
When I was much younger, maybe like 10, 12 years old, I had a class in my school where they taught us how to dye garments. And
what school is that?
I was at a Waldorf school. But that's what really changed a lot for me, because I realized, wow, I can change the color of things. And that's when I started. That was like the first seed, really.
Fundamentally, I think I started upcycling because I couldn't afford the cool clothes that I wanted. I remember making essentially dupes for myself in high school of things that I really liked. And yeah, just wanting to have a really original style, but only having a Forever 21 budget meant that I had to turn to upcycling. Also, if you don't have a ton of sewing skills, it's easier to start with little alterations than to build an entire garment. So seeing how I could change the shape of a sleeve rather than build an entire shirt was a lot easier for me to imagine. Mm-hmm. And it didn't require a sewing pattern, which for a long time, sewing patterns were pretty intimidating to me. Just mm-hmm. altering things I already owned. and knowing how to do straight stitches and applique and embroidery and things was very fun.
I feel like a lot of people in this orbit know how to do embroidery, even if it's just like very simple. And I love the idea of utilizing embroidery to cover stains or help with a mend as well. If you're a maker, but you haven't dove into mending or upcycling yet, I feel like that could be a good place to start. But I also, Pooja, I want to hear more about your art, because the video that Charlotte sent to me was of you painting this bag. To me, that is an upcycle. Tell us more about that part of your life.
I've always been a painter, and I painted on more traditional mediums, but I've always loved fashion. And recently, I realized that I don't have to separate the two of them. My mother always painted on clothes, even when I was a child.
Right.
Like, when I stained my clothes, she was just like, look, it's okay, I'll put a rose on it.
That's so cute.
As a child, I didn't want to wear those clothes. I was embarrassed. No,
but
I think as I grew older, and I think I'm finally, like, at a skill level that I'm okay with wearing it outside. That was a big turning point for me. But also, just having the time to do it has brought me to this phase. I think making something that you're proud of takes time and a lot of patience. Like that bag took me, I didn't count, but maybe between 30 to 40 hours.
It's really beautiful. We'll make sure to share pictures of it.
Thinking of embroidery, though, on a much smaller scale, I think embroidery, it's so easy to personalize things with embroidery. And one of the projects that's coming to mind for me is my friend Anne is very good at, I mean, all things, but textiles especially. And she made me this going away gift when I moved to Toronto. And it was this very simple hoodie that she had made for me, but she had embroidered this little stick figure with a heart, and it said a hug from home in within the cuff. So you had to turn over the cuff to be able to see it. And her idea was that this warm hoodie that she made for me was going to be a little hug from home whenever I needed it. And it just elevated the gift so much. And it went from being like, oh my goodness, such a cute jacket, to like bursting out in tears. And all it was a few stick figures with embroidery.
That's so sweet.
With embroidery, something I've been trying to do recently is, you know, when you see clouds and you try to turn them into something, trying to do the same thing with stains and just seeing what they could be and trying to turn them into something else.
Let's talk a little bit about the different types of mending.
When it comes to mending, the first thing you have to understand is that there's different kinds of fabric. And the big difference is either like a knit fabric or a woven fabric. And the woven fabric is something like a collared shirt, a pair of jeans, and the knit fabric is obviously something like your hat, socks, or even some stretchy, tight t-shirts. And when it comes to mending, if you're mending something that is woven, you can do something like a patch, or just essentially you're basically fusing two pieces of fabric together to make it stronger. But when it comes to something that is knit, you need to create a mend and a patch that is stretchy, because the fabric is stretchy. And that's when it gets a little bit more complicated and you do something. I mean, there's different ways of doing this, but the one I like to do is darning. And that's basically where you create a little woven patch within your knitted garment, but you make it out of the same yarn as your garment is made out of. And therefore, it'll have the same kind of stretch as your garment. And that just means it won't create weird folds in the fabric, and it won't change the shape of what you're wearing. And then the third type of mending is on felted materials, so things like berets. And there, it's not a knit or a woven fabric, it's a felted material, so you have to felt onto it. Needle felting is a way to approach mending felted garments. Yeah, so you basically just needle felt right onto the fold and then use some kind of abrasive washing that will reinforce it and keep it in its place.
When I first started learning how to darn and mend and sashiko stitching and all of that, it did feel a little overwhelming. I think my one tip as somebody who is not as pro as the both of you would be, it's already messed up. There's already a hole. So if you're learning, like, it's okay to test things out and try things. The first time that I tried to mend a pair of jeans, I didn't use the right jean material. And I didn't realize that the jean material that I had for the backing that I was going to stitch onto was more of a firmer jean. And then the actual jeans were stretchy. And so that ended up not working out well. But what would you say are like some good tips for people who are wanting to try this?
Always YouTube forever. You'll find an endless supply of very slow and straightforward videos on how to create a nice patch. A lot of people will just create a patch. They'll add a square fabric and stitch around the square. But if you really want it to last, the thing you want to do is put stitches within the square as well so that it really becomes one fabric. And you mentioned earlier sashiko stitching, and that's a type of stitching where you end up creating these beautiful geometric patterns. But the reason they're geometric is because your stitches are evenly distributed around the patch. If you follow a pattern that is more geometric, chances are it'll last longer. Patching is the most intuitive of the mends, I think, because you can see how you're directly just covering a hole, mm-hmm. and that will solve your problem. Mm-hmm. But if you are good at applique, I think I encourage you to do a fun shape because that'll also make it nicer to look at. Mm-hmm. And going back to what we were talking about earlier with stains, I think the same kind of patching technique is also great to use on things like stains, covering stains if you make an interesting shape. Or even more recently, I've been covering a lot of ugly logos. When I go thrifting, there's really cool sweatshirts and things that I like the color of, but then they have, I don't know, like a giant Rogers Telecom logo on it. By covering it with a cute star or pattern, I think it just breathes new life into the garment.
When in like a making process, one thing that keeps me going is that while I'm doing it, I might not like it at many stages. But my thought process is I'm going to keep adding to it until I like it. And that's okay. So I keep adding to it until I reach a point that I like it. You don't have to do it all at once.
I love the idea of setting it down and coming back to it. You're extending the life of a piece of fabric that you've loved so much that there is a stain or a hole or whatever. And it's okay if it takes a moment for you to get to the place where you love it again, as long as you're giving it a try. If you're patching, try and find patches that are similar material, and definitely learning sashiko, because not only do you end up with such a beautiful piece, but it's also very calming. It's like very meditative for me. So it's another perk of knowing that.
I've been seeing a lot more videos of people mending their couches or furniture or even curtains, and that's super exciting. And then also what you're saying about loving something until it has holes, I really want to mention this incredibly talented textile artist called Celia Pin. She's a textile artist who mends clothing but realizes that the holes in a garment are a reflection of how your body moves and how that is such a reflection of your individuality, and how you move in a garment and where how you choose to sit will then lead to the types of holes that you develop in your clothing. And she often mends things of people who have passed away and almost sees it as a way to remember their physical self. There's something cool about even just how holes often come with repetition and realizing that you as a person probably have different patterns than someone else.
That's a really good way of thinking of it. What I love about darning is it can be done without a special anything. You can utilize, obviously very carefully, utilize like a light bulb or an orange. But when it comes to darning, do you have any tips?
You can use anything with a kind of circular angle. At the recent mending event we did, we wanted to have at least 15 darning eggs, which is what they're called. But we didn't. We only had about 4. Wendy, who I was organizing the event with, ended up just bringing a bunch of her daughter's baby toys because all of the baby toys had these circular edges and then a base that you could attach your elastic to. And that worked really well. Anything that is vaguely mushroom shaped should work. If you're somebody that has experience mending, this is something I'm trying to do myself, is looking into weaving patterns, because there's so many intricate weaving patterns that can be done on a small scale. You can even go as small as using certain threads or taking apart your embroidery thread. From there, you can, yeah, just create these gorgeous designs with the same basic darning techniques that you've been using. And then, of course, you can get a speed weaver. It's basically like a comb that holds up your threads, and that'll help you if you're a perfectionist and you like your threads to be very evenly distributed, but it's also definitely not necessary.
Mm-hmm. So Katrinkles, their darning loom is very similar to the speed weave, yeah, but it doesn't do the like back and forth situation that the speed weave does. Right now, nobody can see me that's listening, but I'm doing a cool back and forth dance. it's right here. So another thing that you can do is look on, I think that I got this on Etsy or eBay, but it is, what I'm holding up is a darning mushroom, and there are all of these little marks on the top of it that showed like how many times it had been used. It's like an extension of what you're trying to do, right? Like instead of buying a new darning loom or whatever, I love the idea of finding something that has been used and keep things out of a landfill and lengthen its life.
I've just been realizing how much more fun it is to work in community, and that is something that I'm really pursuing in the city of Toronto.
Tell us about the mending event that you hosted. I want to hear more about that.
This mending event was very special because I was hosting it with a friend of mine who is essentially my childhood YouTube sewing hero. Her name is With Wendy on YouTube, and I'd watched her videos since I was about 12. And believe it or not, the first time we met was just on the street, and I started crying. And then I think I made her so uncomfortable that she started crying. and from there, our friendship bloomed. It was cool because she was one of the first people online that made me feel like there was a younger sewing community that I could seek out. And I was also really surprised at how multi-generational the event ended up being. Because I had promoted it mostly on TikTok, I was really expecting it to be skewed towards a much younger demographic. And in the end, we had truly all ages and even a few men show up to the event. And that was really cool to see that this is something that interests all different kinds of people. I also just love hearing about people's clothes, and coming together to mend things just led to so many interesting conversations about the types of clothing people brought in and the types of clothing they felt were worth mending. And that was really interesting because for some people, it was just, even it was a Shein piece that they really loved because they like the style of it, and that makes it worth mending. You can determine for yourself the value of the objects you own. And I think that's a really empowering realization.
Last year, so instead of doing a make along, we did a mend along and encouraged our community. We had a couple classes that were on the app that taught certain mending techniques and encouraged the community to learn. But also there were a lot of people who were super stoked because they had a pile of things that needed to be mended. And it was like, okay, we're all doing this together. This is awesome. So maybe we'll do another mend along in the making app.
And also building on that, I think having creative boundaries is so inspiring. And I think for most makers can resonate with that, of having some kind of limitation ends up leading to so much more creativity. And mending is that for me a lot of the time. It just, starting a project from scratch is a lot more, it takes a lot more out of me than having to come up with what to build. And I think upcycling is similar because you're sort of limited to your waste, and that can be really a really creative place to start from. I was also going to shout out, if anybody listening is from Montreal, there is a monthly mending night that happens at the nightclub Le Système. And it's really, I can't believe, I haven't been yet, but I really want to go because I think it's quite different than my kind of cozy mending night with tea and soft music. It's a mending night where you can literally have drinks and also be mending your clothing, and they have sewing machines there and everything like that. So there's definitely, it's getting reinvented as a practice, which is really exciting.
Going out and mending. What are you doing tonight? I'm going to the club to mend. I love that so much. Have either of you ever upcycled yarn from a sweater that you found at a thrift store?
Yes, I have taken apart a sweater in order to use the yarn. However, I've also come to realize that a lot of sweaters nowadays, they sew down the edges. You have to really be sure that you're going to be able to unravel it, because especially cheaper garments are sewn together. So if you try to unravel it, you end up with a lot of short pieces, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I remember my grandmother from Nova Scotia, her mother would do that every time she grew out of a sweater, would just unravel it and knit a new one with a different like color block, I guess, stripe at the bottom.
Well, and I think that a lot of people have, especially people who have been knitting and crocheting for years, you come to a point where you have so many sweaters. Maybe there's a sweater that you've worn so many times and the yarn is still good quality, but maybe it's not your style anymore. And you can frog it and rewind it. If you do find a sweater at a thrift store, you don't want to bring any sort of unfortunate things into your house, especially if it is wool. Do you have tips on that? The bad four-letter word, moth.
I did an internship at a textile museum. And while I was there, every time they got new items into their collection, we had this giant freezer. And you had to put the textiles in the freezer for at least 24 hours or something, and then would bring it into their collection. And I just thought that was very cool, that in the museum there was a giant room that was a freezer that no one else got to see.
Okay. So we did get a little distracted by this story. If you do plan on attempting to reclaim some yarn from a sweater, from a thrift store, or even purchase yarn from a thrift store, you know, that four-letter word, I'm not even going to say it because I don't want to invite that into my life. Anyways, we want to avoid that, right? So putting it into a bag and putting the yarn or the sweater in a freezer, I've read for up to a week. I mean, the longer the better, right? Like, we don't want to invite those four-letter little guys into our home and into our beautiful yarn stashes and our closets. So once you have frozen the item, I've read, wash it as many times as possible. However, unravel the sweater first, wrap it up into a big loop, and soak it as you would any other sweater. Don't use warm water, especially if it's wool, and utilize whatever you use for soap to wash the sweaters that you already have. I'm sure that there are a million ways of ensuring that your closet is safe. So do a little research, but we love the idea of reclaiming yarn from sweaters from a thrift store. And also, we love a good secondhand craft shop. Let's touch on a few things that we saw that were interesting within the Making app this week.
I am a baby knitter, and for that reason, I am very impressed with the handmade yarn on the Making app and the people that are spinning their own wool. Yeah, I've just realized I'm new into the world of yarn and realizing how much that affects the end result. And I think I'm very impressed with whatever mama's big, kind of bulky, crazy. It looks like a sculpture, but I think it is just a ball of yarn. Yeah, that is the first one that stood out to me.
We have a lot of people on the app who even like go as far as posting the animals. I love seeing a good lamb on the feed. It just makes my heart so happy.
Oh my goodness. You were saying one of your dreams is to make your entire closet. I would love to make something, but absolutely from start to finish, and just go from like the sheep to the dyeing, to the spinning, to the knitting. And I know many people have probably done this in the past, but I would love to do that for myself.
Yes.
The one that stood out was the 500 soft sculpture pieces by Gisèle Lemieux. And they're just these dolls. And I think they're so beautiful. She basically did printmaking on top of fabric and then created dolls out of that practice.
Did you find anything on the Making app that was inspiring this week, Pooja?
Someone made a baby blanket, and it's really beautifully woven. It's by Felix Aguilar. I love the black and white pattern. And I love how making something for a baby to be born is premeditative.
Yeah, like putting intention into the object.
I just want to give a shout out to at B Makes. So B Jackson is one of those people that will post her wardrobe that she's making to the feed, and it just blows my mind every single time. Not only is like the fit absolute perfection, but just the little details that she puts into her makes that really makes pieces one of a kind. So shout out to B, because you are what I aspire to do at some point in my life.
Nice.
We end with a moment of gratitude, because that's how we end every meeting at Making, and it always brings lots of joy and happiness to everything that we do. What are you each grateful for?
I'm grateful that it's cooled down in Ontario. We've been having incredibly hot days, and it's been really hard to sleep, but today has been the first beautiful day in a while. I'm feeling grateful for Pooja for joining me on this podcast, because this is the first podcast I do, and it's nice to have a friend.
I'm grateful to be invited here, but also to be able to connect with people who believe in similar things and want to make things with their hands. We can come together like this and have a conversation like this.
Yeah.
And then again, I am very grateful for the weather, because it means that I can go outside and really touch the grass and not feel separated from the environment, because we are part of it.
Yeah.
The ability to get outside and be with friends and family. And last week's podcast was with my nephews, and I got to spend a lot of time with my family over the last couple weeks, and also my chosen family, as my friend Kelly is celebrating her marriage. And I got to get together with her and a lot of her friends over this weekend, who then became my friends. Everybody in that space is also a maker of some sort and creative, and just connecting with new people in real life. It was beautiful. And then throw the sun on top of that, and you've just got your perfect weekend. Thank you both so much for joining me on this podcast.
Well, I mean, thank you so much for having us.
Keep making.
This is
keep making.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to experiment. I think I'm saying that out loud for myself as well. I think it's easy to, oh my God, no, I'm about to go into a tangent.
That's okay. To join the amazing community of makers in the Making app, head to themakingapp.com to download and sign up, or head to your favorite app store and search Making. You can listen to the Making Conversation podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Of course, we'd love for you to subscribe and share with your friends. But also, did you know that you can listen to the Making Conversation podcast in the Making app? Open up the Making app and click Discover. Scroll down to Podcasts and you'll see all current and past podcasts listed there. You can listen while you scroll the feed, post details into a project, search through the marketplace, or even just have it out while you're working on your favorite whip. If you've made it this far and you're interested in sponsoring Making Conversation, send us a note at hq@makingco.com and we'll be in touch. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the Making app.